We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Anthony Herron, Score football analyst.
Khalil Mack, he's fast, he's ferocious. When Mack is coming from the backside, then he's a guy who can make a game-changing, game-altering sort of tackle, where if an Anthony Herron is chasing from the backside, all right, you may get tripped up on your ankles, but you're not necessarily as worried about some sort of a strip or takeaway happening.
Former NFL defensive lineman and Iowa Hawkeye, Big Ant Herron, with Dan Bernstein and Leila Rahimi on 670 The Score.
Let's talk football with Anthony Herron on a very busy, if you like to use such words for such things, historic day, as the Bears have decided on another head coach. Anthony Herron is on Twitter at Big Ant Herron. He is with us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. He also joins us on Twitch, that is absolutely flying quickly, furiously, twitch.tv/Chicago670thescore, and he's even doing a little bit of a shoulder shimmy for you, just because that's a signature move of Big Ant Herron. Well, Anthony, here we are. You heard it when we heard it just about an hour ago. What do you think?
Like it, I suppose, you know, just for a starting step. I certainly don't have
ouch.
Any. Yeah,
I suppose.
I don't have any issue to take with it. It's not one of these slam dunk hires that you say they have knocked it out of the park and you have some sort of a proven definitive winner, because Matt Eberflus has never been a head coach at any level of football before. And I think that the defensive background that's there is fairly stellar when you consider, especially just what he's been doing over the last handful of years in Indianapolis with the Colts. And so the guy can coach ball, the guy can coach defense. And, you know, folks I've been communicating with about him over the last couple of days all seem really impressed with the detail that he coaches and communicates the game with. It is a different step, as we have a very recent example of. It is a different step when you get the big whistle, when you're responsible for everything that goes into being a head coach in the National Football League. So my hope is that this guy this isn't the first potential head coaching opportunity that Matt Eberflus has gone through. The Houston Texans are a grease fire. So like last offseason, he turned down the opportunity to interview with them, and his name has been, you know, cycling through this for a couple of years now. So he's someone who's known that opportunities would likely be available to him here. He's just been coaching at that level. His defenses have performed under his leadership at that level. That's a good thing, man. He's not like just some flash in the pan who just came off of one season of quality coordinating. He's been at this for a minute and has done it at a really effective level at multiple levels here for quite a while now, and he's still fairly young in his early 50s. But he ain't did it as a head man before, so I think a little bit of a relative degree of brake pumping is probably wise.
The idea of him coming from the Tony Dungy, Rod Marinelli, Lovie Smith tree, that this is, however they want to describe it, however they want to talk around it, about his flexibility and about how multiple he can be, it does appear we are headed back to the future of a Tampa 2 base. Are you confident that at least for now, the important players on this defense can be retrofit to 4-3 positions?
I am. And what excites me about it to a certain extent, and part of this is assumption, but when you pair Ryan Poles and Matt Eberflus, a defensive coach who's coming from a franchise that's won a lot in recent years in Indianapolis, and as as unstable as Jim Irsay can seemingly be at times, that the Colts, you know, through various head coaches and various quarterbacks and a lot of movement in the front office, for the most part, man, they've done a lot of winning over the last 20 plus years. And I think for him coming from that, I'd be surprised if the Bears approach this coming season, because part of what I was curious about is, and, you know, we'll obviously find out for sure when we're hearing from the new people in charge, but I was wondering if the Bears would view 2022 as some sort of a season to maybe take a step back, to perhaps, I'm sure they wouldn't use the word rebuild, but how will they view this? You know, the cap situation isn't awful, but it's not amongst the strongest in football. It's kind of middle of the pack somewhere. Are they going to look to unload talent, make a bunch of extra roster space monetarily, which they will likely still have to do to some extent, but it does. This Matt Eberflus hire does give me the impression they're not likely to just completely tear down the defense. You know, I've been wondering, are we going to see what we hope would be a healthy Khalil Mack and a healthy Robert Quinn coming off the edge together this next football season? And this, in my opinion, increases the chances of that.
But guys, they're coming off the edge differently. We're talking hand on the ground now.
Right.
And
right.
That is different.
It is. It is. Robert Quinn prefers playing defensive end. He prefers having his hand in the ground, and Khalil Mack was an all-pro in the same season, not only as an outside linebacker, but as a defensive end. So both guys have done that extensively, at times exclusively, earlier in their career. So I do think that especially off the edge, they can be effective enough with that. And even one of the things I've talked to you about, just kind of combing through the Bears personnel as we're talking through this live here, think about Bilal Nichols and what he's sort of been trying to work through in his time early in his career. He's been most effective in his time with the Chicago Bears, not necessarily as a guy who consistently hits blocks really effectively up front, even though that was more what his collegiate defensive scheme was. He's been at his best when he's getting to the edge, when he's penetrating into the backfield, when he's making plays on the opposing side of the line of scrimmage. When you have a three technique and a 4-3 front, that's where your defensive line can be at its best. That's where I could really see Bilal Nichols making some hay. If he was just a true three technique in a scheme, sometimes he's outside shoulder the left guard, sometimes he's outside shoulder the right guard. But if in that, you know, that Warren Sapp, or you know, he's obviously not Aaron Donald, but just schematically with some of the ways that the Rams would utilize Aaron Donald, just a guy who, you know what, you are beefy enough to be on the interior, but you have the potential, you have the opportunity. We are sending you on seek and destroy missions into the opposing backfield. Bilal Nichols is at his best when he's allowed to do that.
It's amazing how little we're talking about offense right now and how massive a hire or hires the offensive staff is going to be. This is when now there's conjecture as to the involvement of Ryan Poles. And I imagine that Bill Polian and Ted Phillips and George McCaskey now can step back, because now things get down a level when it comes to that. But in the discussions between Matt Eberflus and Ryan Poles will be not just the offense that you're going to run for Justin Fields, but how strong a personality that is, because it may just be now, with the head coach being on the defensive side of the ball, this becomes more of an associate head coach responsibility than it would otherwise have been in a league that, let's face it, offense matters more than defense, you can say.
Mm-hmm. And I believe that my hope for Matt Eberflus, as a guy who throughout his entire coaching career, certainly his entire time as a coordinator, both at Toledo and Missouri and in Indianapolis with the Colts, and even some time with the Browns, he's been a guy who's called plays defensively. It won't bother me a lick if he gets someone else and just tags them with defensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. And not that I want Matt Eberflus, like, you know, necessarily kind of nosing in to offensive play calling or anything like that. He's a defensive guy. But think of Mike Vrabel with the Titans, where he came in and he's had his defensive background, but he's running the full show and his imprint is on everything that the Titans do. There's a reason that they didn't take a big step back when Derrick Henry left with an injury. It's not because Derrick Henry's not a space alien and one of the most gifted athletes we've ever seen playing running back, but Mike Vrabel says, we got to run the rock. We got to be physical on the offensive line, and we need that approach offensively to still be something that allows our defense to take the field with energy. And so my hope for Matt Eberflus would be that he takes a page from the Mike Vrabel book. Vrabel ain't called a play on offense for the Tennessee Titans, but you can see his fingerprints on how they operate offensively and how it benefits everything that they do. You can say the same about Sean McDermott in Buffalo. Defensive coaches, as much as we get excited about them and we love what they do, just because you're not an OC and because you haven't called offensive plays before, we see guys still doing it at a high level in the league. And I believe the ones who are maybe doing it at their best are the ones who do take a little bit of a step back, say, yes, I'm better on defense, I'm overseeing that, but offense, here's how you need to run the show. And maybe even every once in a while, if you're not moving the pocket enough, if you're not running the rock enough, but you got the big whistle, Matt Eberflus, you need to be able to get in that OC's ear and say that, yes, you need to run the football. Let's dial back tempo or intensity of offense, because my defense is starting to get gassed over here. And if you're not calling the defensive plays snap by snap, it gives you more of an ability to oversee everything.
I also, I mean, my mind is racing right now thinking, for example, Jalen Johnson. Is Jalen Johnson, I remember when he was scouted, because of his size and willingness to tackle, he also might be an ideal Tampa 2 style corner rather than having to turn and run, dropping to a landmark and playing with the play in front of him.
So, like, if people want to, they can search my Twitter timeline somewhere. Just, it was probably just before the draft, I called a bunch of Jalen Johnson's games at Utah, and I put some video up of some times where he's like facing Laviska Shenault and, you know, different opponents that they had. And he's best in man-to-man coverage. He is spectacular mano-a-mano. He's a more than willing tackler. He did struggle with tackling a bit his rookie season because he's had so many shoulder injuries over the years. He tackled more effectively this past season at the level that I've seen Jalen Johnson tackle at in the past. And that's certainly a big part of what the focus has to be when you're playing that Tampa 2 coverage, not just the spatial awareness that's necessary where the corner has to hit certain landmarks, the safeties have to hit certain landmarks just to make sure that they're pattern matching in an appropriate manner. But and you'll certainly obviously get your man coverage opportunities also, but there's going to be a lot of situations where you're playing maybe a little more off man than Jalen Johnson is most comfortable with or prefers, but he's effective in that regard as well. But the tackling end of it will be even that much more key, because there's going to be a lot of eyes in the backfield. This, in theory, because of how frequently Matt Eberflus's defenses have been amongst the best in the National Football League. You look at basically the entire time since he's been the Colts defensive coordinator, there's only one defense in football has taken the ball away more since 2018 than the Colts have, and that's the New England Patriots. And we know the head coach slash defensive mastermind who runs the show for them. So two things the Bears should be really good at: Matt Eberflus' defenses, stop the run. Matt Eberflus' defenses, they do a really effective job taking the ball away. And those have been, over the last couple of seasons, the biggest complaints we can really have. The inconsistency of the Bears' run D, and we haven't seen it since 2018, them taking the rock away. Maybe this can be a part of what revitalizes Eddie Jackson.
Let me get back to something you brought up regarding Eberflus and constructing a staff and having a defensive coordinator that would allow him the comfort and trust of being able to grow into that head coaching role, like you say, with the big whistle. What about Lovie Smith?
Okay, I didn't know if you were going to add a little bit of color to the context of your question.
What about Lovie, Bears defensive coordinator Lovie Smith?
I wouldn't take any issue with it. I mean, you know, Lovie's been around the block a lot. He's obviously been a head coach in this town. If Matt Eberflus, what I don't want is Matt Eberflus to feel threatened by the notion of having experience around him. When you're a first-time head coach, to have an experienced staff who's been there and done that is a big deal. One of the issues you run into if you're Matt Eberflus and you hire Lovie Smith, like, it's one thing to hire some other guy who's been a head coach or a defensive coordinator, but Lovie Smith in this town is the last excellent Bears head coach that has been here. He is the last guy who has taken them to the Super Bowl berth. And not that Lovie's approach or his demeanor would sort of force Eberflus to you know, feel like someone is lording over his shoulder or anything to that regard. I think Lovie's defensive mind can, you know, still gets it done at a high level. I don't know that that's maybe the best way for Matt Eberflus to have his show, being run and to feel like it is his Chicago Bears team and his Chicago Bears defense. I feel like Lovie Smith would maybe be the one name out there that I would say, you might want to shy away from that with this particular organization, because Lovie Smith is the one that a lot of folks still pine for, because that was the last heyday of Bears football.
I get it. And if he weren't running a defense in the NFL right now and running this defense in the NFL right now, his name wouldn't come up. But when we're talking about Rod Marinelli, you know, that it may just be that Marinelli finds his way back to Chicago.
Yeah, and I think on the opposing side of the ball, I mean, you know, as much as, like, I would have a similar reaction if Jim Caldwell were hired as the head coach right now. And, you know, of course, Jim Caldwell has several successful stints as a head coach in the NFL and has taken a team to the Super Bowl, has been a successful offensive coordinator. So, you know, Jim Caldwell brings a resume with him. You know, I'll admit it, like, I think folks shouldn't be allowed to drive anymore. At least they should have to pass a driving test every year after they're 75. So I'm an ageist, you know, hand up for certain opportunities that you get around here. So I would have some concerns about Jim Caldwell's age. So I would feel a little better about Caldwell head coach hire than I do Eberflus. But I think on the whole, if this cycle plays out a little bit longer and Jim Caldwell isn't getting other interviews, doesn't get offered a gig, maybe that this is a name, maybe that's a guy who you look to get involved as your OC, as your quarterback coach, something like that. The only thing on Jim Caldwell's resume that I don't necessarily find is him working extensively with mobile quarterbacks. Like, he had remarkable seasons with Peyton Manning. He went to a Super Bowl calling plays for Joe Flacco. He had the best seasons of Matthew Stafford's career up until this year, but in Detroit were with Jim Caldwell. Now, stylistically, like I've said before, I think Justin Fields likes to operate from within the pocket, but to be able to move the pocket, to be able to use some QB run just to get that portion of things going, I think certainly here early in the career of Justin Fields will need to be a big part of how they operate. So I wouldn't mind that type of experience and that type of leadership being there on the offensive side of the ball. I would want to know schematically how Jim Caldwell would potentially run things for the Bears specific to the skill sets of Justin Fields. But that's the type of thing that you mentioned, Lovie Smith defense, and that might be asking a bit much intangibly, emotionally for Eberflus, for everyone around the city to be able to handle that, like Lovie back in Hallis Hall, but not being the head man. But Jim Caldwell, if he was up for that, and if he's not getting another head coaching opportunity, I would love that influence in the building, that influence around Justin Fields, because it's so vital for him at this formative stage early in his career.
But then you also change the gravity of Hallis Hall, because, you know, Jim Caldwell, I'm not saying that he's going to stomp his way around meetings or anything like that, but when you have a longtime head coach who does appear to have the autonomy on the more important side of the football, it may not make it easy for a 51-year-old coach who's never been the head coach of anything. Like, you have to balance that kind of team of rivals or that kind of experience, a little bit of having that and not being afraid of people who know more than he does, with also, in any way, even passively undermining any authority.
And that's the key. That's the key for Matt Eberflus, because, like, my rookie year in Detroit in 2001, Marty Morningweg was a first-time head coach. And he was a guy who had been an offensive coordinator. He was a guy who had been on several offensive staffs. He was out in San Francisco. He'd worked under Bill Walsh. He had the resume that was worthy of getting a head coaching opportunity. But what Marty Morningweg ended up doing, he had first-time general manager Matt Millen, and then Marty hired a bunch of college coaches and a bunch of guys with no more experience in the league than him. And it just showed in every facet of how he operated with the Detroit Lions the entire time that Marty was running that show. So to me, if you're a head coach, you've been at this for a minute, this is your first opportunity. But if you truly want success, like, you think about early when Matt Nagy was here, one of the things that impressed me was that he was willing to have, you know, have Brad Childress in there, and have Harry Hiestand in there, and guys who've been at this for a long time. And Childress obviously had even been a head coach before that. And then those guys aren't around very long after that. And that's what began to concern me a bit. But if you're as a young guy, but have enough heft, kind of enough, you know, be formidable enough in your own, you know, to be able to account for yourself in that manner, that self-confidence necessary to say, I'm willing to surround myself with experience, willing to surround myself with guys who've done it at a higher level than I have, to make sure we've got the best, most complete staff, team of rivals, like you said, because that's what can make the Chicago Bears great. That's part of what's been lacking here. That's part of what I hope would end up being the influence that, even though Ryan Poles is young, he's been around how you do this at a high level with the Chiefs. And maybe that can be some lesson that's been learned here by George McCaskey, by the administration over there at Hallis Hall, is to recognize it's not just about these top two hires. I've been using the word infrastructure so much here over the last couple of months because there's a reason. I don't know exactly what it is, but the Bears need to find it. There's a reason that John Fox, his teams didn't get better, that Mark Trestman's teams didn't get better, that Matt Nagy's teams didn't get better over the seasons they were here as a head coach, and making sure you've got a proper staff and the experience necessary to be great with that in all meeting rooms is a big part of what the Bears should focus on.
That's Anthony Heron, the former NFLer. We have plenty more to come as more information rolls in about the news of the day. Your next Chicago Bears head coach is Matt Eberflus. That's the story. We're the score. Talking Bears with Anthony Heron. You hear him on Bears Game Days on the post-game show with Olin Krutz, and you hear him right now here on The Score, the Bernstein and Rahimi Show. Layla's off today, and you've got us talking about the Bears hiring of Matt Eberflus as their head coach. So some of the areas that we have to fill in here, we can talk a lot, Anthony, about this, what it appears to be a Tampa 2 style 4-3 defense that we know well, and we can trace everything that's been said about him with Rod Marinelli, and we know this. We know this defense in our bones, as I've said. If you've been following the Bears long enough, you understand some of these things, and we're going to get familiar with it again. What we don't know is, can he do the soft stuff? Is he ready to lead? Is he ready to set that vision, to set the tone? Is he ready to manage a clock? These things, like when in this first press conference, we're going to get a window into some of this stuff. What do we want to know?
One of the points I was making when we were talking a few minutes ago, I think is fairly useful in that, is instructive in how effective he can really be with that. Because it's hard, man. It's hard to oversee everything that's required of a head coach of a football team, especially at the highest levels. And whether it is clock management, whether it is fourth downs, whether it is personnel groupings and special teams, you name it, when you're calling the plays snap by snap for either side of the ball, you can't truly devote your attention to the other facets of the game. Now, maybe, you know, a lot of the best have sort of grown to that at a more effective manner. But I mean, you know, even Andy Reid has never historically been a guy who's been great with clock management and timeout usage. Part of that is because he's always called the offensive plays for the most part of the time he's been in Kansas City and back in Philadelphia. So my hope is that Matt Eberflus shows up here and says, you know what? Yeah, I've got my imprint that I want for how we're going to operate schematically on defense. And like you referenced, you know, there's a hybrid nature to a lot of what happens around the NFL now. So he's seen as a 4-3 guy. He can look at this personnel and say, you know what, we can play a lot of odd fronts with these guys also, but I've got two edge defenders who have both played defensive end at a high level in this league before too. So I don't see that being a huge adjustment for him with the personnel available here. And then, of course, like I mentioned, his fingerprints need to be all over the offense just in their approach. But to be able to take that step back and say, you know what, I'm going to trust someone else with the snap-by-snap minutiae of what we're doing, and that will allow him to oversee the other aspects of the game. That'll allow him to go storming down the field and make sure that the special teams, like every time, think about every time before the punt team runs onto the field, they all huddle up for a moment, and then they go trotting out onto the field, and they take their formation. But every once in a while, you'll see a head coach go sprinting over there and just go yell in somebody's ear real quick just to make sure that they're alert and that they're ready and they're not about to sleepwalk through that special team scenario. If he's getting ready to, like, he just got done calling the defenses and he's over here making adjustments and looking at his tablets and everything else, he may not be able to do that because he's getting ready for his guys to take the field. He can oversee all that in a much more effective manner. This is my thing. My plea I make to a lot of first-time head coaches, man, let somebody else call the plays. You be the head man. You maintain that big whistle. You oversee the side of the ball that's your expertise, but you can do the other stuff more effectively when you're not the one who's got that coordinator tag right next to being the head man.
We hear the term complementary football all the time, and it means different things to different people. Depending,
we didn't hear it until Matt Nagy's fourth year, yeah. Unfortunately for him. But yeah, usually we hear it a good bit. Yeah.
So it's an oversimplification to say to an offense, like, you score as many points as you can as fast as you can. Go score 100, and we'll figure it out on this side of the ball. But the truth is, there are some systems that may match up better with others. The idea, the base philosophy behind what appears to be Matt Eberflus's defense, as we understand it, is that you force the opposing offensive coordinator to be patient. You force the opposing offense to execute multiple times. It gives you a chance to turn them over. The more plays they have to run to cover all that ground, the more opportunities you have to jar the ball loose or to make a negative play that puts them behind the chains. And I'm not judging that. I'm just saying that's what the philosophy has been. Mm-hmm. Is there an offensive philosophy now that fits better with that than another?
I don't believe we should presume that. While the previous administration, with good reason, was completely invested in David Montgomery as the future of the Bears' rushing attack, and there's been nothing effort-wise that should lead us to believe, and in skill-wise, to lead us to believe that that David Montgomery can't be that. But I think you will likely see the Bears bone up the backfield so much more. And the offensive line, there's only so many resources available at the moment with, somewhat limited draft capital. But I would imagine you'll see them bone up the offensive line. You'll see them bone up the run game. Just think about what he just came from under Frank Reich, under a quarterback / offensive coordinator / head coach in Indianapolis. But that approach was still, even with the Colts, taking pressure off of the passing game, using Jonathan Taylor and that rushing attack. And if you weren't handing it to Jonathan Taylor, you were throwing it to Jonathan Taylor. But he had the rock, and he was running folks over. He was controlling the clock. And I believe that approach is what we'll see the Bears doing more so. And that's not the only approach they can win in football. And maybe, just like we've seen play out in Buffalo over a couple of seasons here, the Bills' run game is a much smaller portion of what they do offensively now, still with a defensive head coach in Sean McDermott. But now that his quarterback has matured into this dynamo that Josh Allen has become, now, resources go here, go there. Our running game isn't as effective, but we've still figured out how to operate offensively at a high level while still playing big-time defense. But there's steps in that. There's principalities involved in getting to a certain point, and I do believe that that's, any defensive-minded coach, we tend to expect that. And I don't think anything about what Matt Eberflus is just coming from would indicate that here his approach would be any different. You're going to see more running backs in that room. You're going to see some more offensive linemen, especially on the interior. We don't know yet. And, I know it's all good that Ryan Poles played offensive line. Maybe he doesn't think James Daniels is that great. I hope he does. I think Daniels is a really talented guy, and he went to my alma mater. But we're going to see more resources on the O-line and the running back position.
I would like to know a lot more about who the Quentin Nelson is going to be. It's real easy to look at what this things the Colts have done successfully in their running game, and if you watch number 56 and only watch number 56, you get an understanding of just how much of what they do is based on him destroying everything in front of him.
And there's, not everyone has Thanos playing the offensive line for them, so there's
he's that there's, good.
Yes, he really is. He really is. And there's some degree of acquiescence that needs to go with that, where, because your O-line is so important, and I think that, a defensive coach coming in with that mentality, we'll see resources going towards that, and you also have the offensive lineman who's now the general manager as well. That being said, the Quentin Nelson archetype, that may not be something that's really available to you, whether it's through this draft cycle in the second round or later, or just in free agency, and then you do have needs elsewhere. And that's the tricky thing I find with the Bears cap situation at large, where reportedly available cap space is middle of the league somewhere, so it's not awful, but they do have a lot of needs. You would like more depth on the offensive line. Like, I even talked to Olin about this. Sam Mustipher is Olin's guy, but when it comes down to it, you can get by with Sam Mustipher, but you can be more dominant with someone else. And to bring in more competition for center, for the interior of the offensive line, make sure you draft another young tackle. I mean, I do feel pretty good about both young tackles, but You can't just count on that. You know, so you need depth on the O-line. You will need playmakers on the outside at wide receiver. They're positions of need. And in going to more of a 4-3 look, if that is going to become a more consistent part of how they operate in the front seven, you're going to need more depth at linebacker. Also, I mean, who else beyond Roquan Smith are we even certain is coming back? You know Roquan's got to come back. If nothing else, they got to figure out a way to pay him. They do have another year of contract control. But you don't even know who else is going to be on the roster. Danny Trevathan isn't going to be here. Alec Ogletree may or may not be here.
And when you think about Ogletree, he was a Mike backer who specialized in coverage when he was younger. And maybe you hope that he's your stopgap before you draft somebody there. Maybe you get by in the first year with him as your Mike, if in fact they're going back to a more Tampa style rather than Chicago style defense, which means Chicago style defense is better. if it means that Roquan Smith is your trustworthy will archetype, which he probably can be.
Oh, right. He can play Mike. He can play Will. He can play Sam. Like, they could just stand him up in a two-point stance and be your 3-4 outside backer. There's nothing that Roquan Smith can't do as a linebacker on the football field. I'm fairly confident of that. Problem is, he's the only one you know for sure is coming back and going to contribute anything to you next season. I agree. I wouldn't have any issue if Alec Ogletree returns. I think his performance this past year earned that. But you don't know it for sure. I mean, you know, they didn't sign him until in the midst of training camp. They didn't give him some long-term deal with guarantees. But you do need more personnel if you're going to what your base package is, a 4-3. You just need more personnel for that, because your Robert Quinn, Khalil Mack types, Travis Gibson, those will be defensive ends in that scheme. And so they're not going to be off the ball in a two-point stance playing Will or playing Sam or certainly not playing Mike. So that will require more depth at linebacker than what the Bears have on the roster right now. So those will be things, and I'm sure that some of that discussion already played out even going through the interview process. That'll probably be the thing we hear least about, is what the specifics of the Q&A and interviews were leading into this time. But that's part of where, you know, even like Ryan Poles in accepting the job, I would imagine, especially how quickly they moved to Matt Eberflus, would seem to indicate that he definitively, and we've seen some reports out there, he discussed that with the Bears. They had a list of their liking. He said, here are guys that I like as well. And so he moved quickly. I mean, you know, earlier this morning or whenever they kind of came to terms with Eberflus, had all these jobs open. The Bears are the ones who have one filled at this point. But I am going to be curious how much we end up hearing about just whether or not Eberflus and the scheme he runs, how much knowledge does he share at the moment about whether or not it suits what he wants to do and what he feels he can do with this Bears personnel. Because I certainly think it can work, but they're going to have to bone up a few different spots to really get it kind of beefed up where they need it to be as far as depth.
Former Bears stars are weighing in. One well-known Will linebacker by the name of Lance Briggs has tweeted, please, 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 Bears hire Rod Marinelli or Lovey as the defensive coordinator. And sharing that tweet is Charles Tillman, who says, please, 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 at Chicago Bears, hire Rod Marinelli as the defensive coordinator. So there are well-liked former Bears openly stumping for their guy or guys at this point.
I like it. I like it. I mean, we know how invested the former great players are still in the magnitude of this team, wanting it to be great, wanting it to do well. And it's one thing to have a defensive-minded head coach come in and take it over. But like the point I've been discussing, to have someone else you can trust, even if that individual is extremely experienced, is very well regarded, if he puts together a staff of very experienced guys older than him, guys who've been around the block more than he has, guys who have been former head coaches, that to me will speak highly of just how much fortitude Matt Eberflus really has and how much confidence he has in his ability to truly run the show. And, you know, he's been in the league and doing it at a high level long enough and has been sought after as a head coaching commodity for multiple seasons at this point, where I think he should feel, you know, that level of confidence in what he can do just in overseeing a staff. You know, these guys, when they get this job, they've been at this and preparing specifically. And one of the things that I've heard from multiple people, the word detailed continues to come up about Matt Eberflus. So I'm certain he's got a full grab. He's got all the Excel spreadsheets you could hope for on specifically what types of assistants he would want to hire. He's probably already communicated to the Bears about who he would pursue or maybe has already discussed for his offensive staff.
Yes.
And I just think that a guy of his age would still benefit from. You know, he's older than Matt Nagy was when he took the gig, but Nagy could have really benefited from having more experience staying in the room with him. So while I do think, you know, and, you know, Lovey's not a jerk, he wouldn't be a jerk about it, having Lovey in the same building with you because of what he means to this Bears franchise, that could be potentially awkward. You know, so sure. I'm just being realistic about this thing. Like, I didn't play for Lovey. I know there's some connections a lot of the guys have with him. I'd be happy for Lovey to have success. It'd be asking a lot for somebody to be Lovey Smith's boss in the building over there at Hallis Hall. But Rod Marinelli and a bunch of other really experienced guys or other folks who've coordinated sides of the ball or been head coaches and can now do it, like I referenced Jim Caldwell on offense, I think having experience on his staff will be a big deal for Matt Eberflus.
I'd love to know what's going on in the players' group chats right now, because no matter what, players are almost like the rest of us. Mm-hmm. Like, there are going to be like, you heard of this guy? What do you know? What does he run? Right. I guess I'm going to have my hand on the ground now, or I guess I'm going to be a three technique. It's interesting to me to know what the players themselves are saying and how they feel.
And if Bilal Nichols, let's presume, my assumption is that any discussions that will begin with Bilal Nichols about trying to re-sign him here, part of the pitch should be, like, if I was involved in it, part of the pitch I would be making to Bilal Nichols would be, your stats are at a certain level. You may be looking for top-end money. You know, you're not Aaron Donald or anybody like that. We'll pay you handsomely, but let's do a deal and then have some escalators in there for certain statistical margins that we believe you'll hit as a three technique in this scheme. Let's have an incentive-laden contract, because we really feel like you're a guy who can get after the quarterback, who can make a bunch of tackles for loss. You stay on the field, we have no doubt you're going to hit these incentives within the scheme you're going to run right now. You're not going to do a whole lot of two-gapping in this new scheme we're going to run. You're going to be a playmaker as a three technique within this defense, and that could be very enticing for Bilal Nichols.
Also told that Rod Marinelli is going to be on the Score at 2:10. He is going to be on with Parkins and Spiegel, the former Bears. I think he had a coordinator title as well as defensive line. And Rod Marinelli may be back in the mix. We'll get all that information directly from him on these airwaves, so make sure you tune in at 2:10 for that. I know you're going to have a very busy day today. So, Anthony Heron, thank you for taking so much time for us. It's well appreciated.
You got it, Dan. We'll be watching it closely.
That is Anthony Heron, the former NFLer and a frequent contributor to the Bernstein and Rahimi show. We have a lot more to come. We had a lot of people lining up, and the overall feeling of some of the initial response that we're seeing from are the modalities that we have here, be it Twitch, be it Twitter, be it the text line or the phone line, is careful, guarded optimism from some. There has been the typical, this is not, I've never heard of this guy. Who is this guy? First time head coach. This sucks. He's going to be awful. We knew we'd get some of that, but it's a difficult position to be in when so much is asked of us to wait and see before reacting, because it's not really the nature of what we do. I want to hear how you're thinking through it. 312-644-6767. I'm Dan Bernstein. This is the Bernstein and Rahimi Show. We've got Lawrence Holmes coming up in just a bit. This is going to be your place to be all day on the Score.
No, go Bears.
The Bears have done what we thought they might do, and that is swing it wildly back in the other direction. It may have just so happened that in hiring the best possible head coach candidate on the list of Ryan Poles, coincidentally on the list of Bill Polian, that they ended up with somebody who is on defense, and that's okay. I'm not going to get crazy that they didn't hire some offensive magician to help out Justin Fields. You know when you do that? Now. Now you do that. Now you hire that guy also, and you make sure that the most important player on your team, your most valuable, significant asset, is well taken care of, because this is just the first step. We've got so much to fill in here. The difference between this being Matt Eberflus or it being Jim Harbaugh is felt in that difference. And if you're just joining us, Dan Bernstein of the Bernstein and Rahimi Show, Layla's off today. So we were here when the news broke a couple hours ago. that the Bears had decided on Matt Eberflus. Just to get you caught up, I am told by sources that I trust that it did so happen that while Eberflus's name was on the list of Bill Polian and the Bears' existing brain trust, that Ryan Poles also and independently had identified him as one of his candidates as well. What I don't know is if that was a contingency in Poles getting the job. If that helped him, if they said, well, wait a second, you like the same head coach as we like. This is collaboration. This is how we do things here. I don't know if that's the case, but I do know that he did also independently think very highly of Matt Eberflus. There was nothing forced on him. We heard earlier today that Dan Quinn had been involved and now is headed back to Dallas to continue as their defensive coordinator. I have asked, did Dan Quinn pull his name out? Is this in any way a fallback? And I was told that Dan Quinn did want to be the Bears head coach, and it was not a situation where he removed himself from consideration. We also know the defense that Matt Eberflus runs, and we are going to see if some of the talent here can be retrofit to that. I'm informed that part of Eberflus's interview did involve him sharing the names of potential offensive coordinators, quarterbacks, coaches, etc., and that was an important part of his presentation. As I've also tried to gather more information about his history, there are people who are very important and successful people in the NFL who work for other teams who feel very strongly about the readiness of Eberflus to be a head coach in the NFL regarding his communication skills, his accountability, his intelligence, emotional intelligence, and self-awareness, that they're all saying nice things. Now, that said, I'm fully aware that I when you do reach out to people, it's rare in the NFL fraternity to have those saying, nah, he's an idiot, he sucks, he can't communicate, he's in over his head. You don't hear that. You generally don't. This is the time that nice things are said about people. We have no information as to when he and or Ryan Poles are going to speak about their new jobs. But the big picture is that the Chicago Bears, a founding NFL franchise, have once again, at this juncture in their history, have a 36-year-old first-time general manager in charge of their football operation and a 51-year-old first-time head coach as their head coach. He has never run a team before, and the first team that Matt Eberflus is going to run is going to be the Chicago Bears. I'm not saying that that's any sort of death blow to them, that it doesn't mean it's not going to work. It becomes an interesting fact at this point. And to have the open question as to who's in charge of Justin Fields, who's in charge of the offense, to not know that is to make this a big open concern at the moment. And I get it. If you're withholding judgment, I understand. If there is some in-between feeling as to the way that this is all kind of coming down right now, because we hadn't heard this name until relatively late in the process, those who have joined us to discuss it have defined this in large part by who he's not.
Dan, I want to take you back to what you were talking about related to Dan Quinn and this process. We focus so much on the process, and they bring in Bill Polian. A lot of Colts connection there. And I like the point that you made about, you know, is Poles considered, you know, is he in consideration? I am speaking in Eberflus and Poles' mind, regardless. So when you have the Polian connection, Poles who already liked Eberflus, among the other two candidates, there seems to be sort of a consensus there in that room. Did that impact the decision of Eberflus over Quinn? And when we look back on it in hindsight, do we criticize that decision? We don't know. I just like to think this is all happening all over again because I enjoy pain as a Bears fan.
I like the thought of speaking in Eberflus.
I just think it's so... I think it's typical, you know? Maybe not typical is the right word, but I just feel like this is appropriate in the way that the Bears completed this hiring process. You bring in an outside consultant who already had his inherent favorable candidates, and here comes...
They did the work. They did the interviews.
Absolutely.
They had it winnowed down to a short list, and then they had when the GM is hired, it could be it's coincidence that it just so happened that he also liked Eberflus, and he said, oh, wow, you like the same guy I like. And then that's when George says, he likes the same guy we like.
Is that
we need, to hire this guy.
Right, that's what I'm thinking, is because they conducted the interviews in that room with their hiring team. Eberflus was among their favorites. Here comes Poles. Ryan Poles says, I like Eberflus as well. Let's do it.
He wasn't the only GM candidate who liked Eberflus. Another piece of information that I have is there is one other with Bears connections. It was Morocco Brown. And I am told that had Morocco Brown gotten the GM job, and had Morocco Brown been able to choose on his own, his top choice would have been Eberflus. That is what I have been reassured by people who know such things. Whether that recommends him more highly to you is up to you. I don't know if you even know if you agree with what Morocco Brown thinks about football, and that's fine, because this is an immense leap of faith once again for the Bears themselves and in turn for us. It will be transition time when we come back. Lawrence Holmes is dressed for television, but he's going to do radio. That's next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.